For over 30 years, Betty Baye wrote a biting and sometimes controversial column in the Louisville Courier-Journal until a round of layoffs ended that. I'm Philip Bailey, and this is Noise and Notes. Baye is still writing, teaching, and was recently inducted into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame. She stopped by to talk about the state of journalism, whether African-American reporters are giving President Obama a pass, and the importance of the Civil Rights era as living American history. How are you doing?
I am fine. I am really doing fine. I am working on a couple of projects, and I'm teaching at Bellarmine. I'm teaching a class on the civil rights movement, women in civil rights. I have 25 sophomores, and I'm really proud of that course. I put a lot of work into I created it, and so I'm really proud because I get to teach a part of my life. I get to teach about a lot of people that I knew and know, and I also have a sense of urgency about teaching this history because many of the people who lived it and fought the movement are dying. George Ware, who was a SNCC guy a few weeks ago, got word that George died, and then Lawrence Guillot. So there are people who are leaving the scene, and this is not the Civil War history. This is living history, and our children have not been taught this history, and maybe because a lot of teachers don't know the history. So I think I'm doing something important. It's like I found, you know, like another mission, and to try to, I think, find a way for me to be active and to speak truth to power as I see it. So teaching a new generation about what happened and trying to help them understand, as Joanne Mance said in one of her essays in our book, Hands on the Freedom Plow, about the women of SNCC, is that every generation has its race to run, and trying to impress upon students that they have a race to run.
I know that after, because the Courier's had a lot of layoffs this year, and I know that after you were laid off, I know a lot of people were coming up to me and saying, well, what happened? I didn't get an announcement. I wasn't really told.
I wasn't told. I didn't get an announcement.
And I think that because there are very few outlets where you have African-American voices in this city. How do you feel about that? Is the womb still fresh, or have you moved past it and you're much bigger than just a column in the
Right. Corner? I have to tell you, it was the worst thing that has ever happened to me. If anybody who saw George Clooney's movie, Up in the Air, about when you get laid off, I had been with Gannett 30 years before I came to Louisville. I was with Gannett. And I think what really hurt was, you know, I never got a chance to say goodbye to my readers. It was never, you know, and even though people say, well, you know, this happens, it's financial, you still feel discarded. And I felt like I felt a little discarded. I was I was off balance for a while because I've worked all my life, you know. I've worked for 50 years. I've never been laid off from anything. And then when I ended up, like, on the unemployment line, and people would see me in the line who read my column and say, well, you know, what are you doing here? And then somehow I got it into my head, and I was saying, you know, I think that it was intended for me to be on the unemployment line. Sometimes you need to be reminded of the things that you write about, the things that you cover as a reporter, to be reminded that that everybody's expendable.
You and, still you read know, newspapers today, the Courier in particular?
Not a whole lot. I read the editorial page. I'd like to see, you know, where it's going. You know, I don't read it every day, but I read, you know, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. I am still a journalist. I just don't work there. I mean, I will not let them or anyone take what I worked so hard to be, what I went to school and studied to be, and what a very important person in my life, Jim Aronson, told me that I could do. So I am still a journalist. I just do other things, freelance. And I think maybe sometimes people don't, I didn't grow up wanting to be a journalist. I grew up in the civil rights movement and I did theater. And so I had three or four lives before I ever went into journalism. So because I had a foundation, you know, it's unlike some people who and this is really some of my friends, that's all they ever wanted to be, and to see their careers taken away from them. But I know that I'm a journalist, I'm a storyteller, you know, and now I'm a teacher.
Besides losing the institutional memory, as I mentioned, very few African Americans in this city have editorial outlets. I thought of you, I think of Dr. Ricky Jones and Leo. But beyond that, I can't really think of people who are writing opinion, and it's still even harder to think of people who are doing hard news outside of sports necessarily in this area.
And I don't even know too many black sports people, tell you the truth.
Yeah, besides,
to be honest,
yeah,
about
I can barely,
right.
I mean, Chip Cosby, I think, from
right.
CN2.
Yeah.
But looking not only here but nationally, what do you think the state of not only journalism is, but African Americans in journalism? Because there was a recent controversy, or at least the issue brought up, of Don't Sleep with T.J. Holmes, the BET show, the former CNN guy who went to BET, going from 5 days a week to now once a week. I wasn't that surprised. Mm-hmm. It's BET. Mm-hmm. No one thinks, oh, the president has an announcement, let me turn on BET. But what do you think of the state of black journalism at this point?
Well, I am a loyal member, of course, of the National Association of Black Journalists. And I remembered how for over 30 years, you know, the struggle to have African Americans in places of power, in the media, in decision making places. And what you realize that, you know, someone said this to me, everybody who is your skin is not your kin. So simply having a black face in some high place in media doesn't indicate that there's going to be a black thrust.
Was that difficult because that was sort of the mantra of the civil rights era. They got turned on its ear, really, what you could say, with the appointment of Clarence Thomas to the U.S. Supreme Court. The idea that just because it's a black face doesn't mean it's liberal.
Right.
There are African-Americans
right.
who are deeply, deeply conservative.
Or progressive.
Or any of
that.
Is it that realization?
Well, I think what it is that we have moved into a corporate culture. And a lot of what we think about as black media is not black-owned. We have black people in media who many of us who've been in media for a long time, we never heard them. We never saw them. They just sort of sprang up. And I think a lot of the people who are doing like commentary and stuff are not necessarily journalists. Many of them have come out of, you know, schools and institutions and think tanks and whatever. I'm not saying they're not doing a good job, but I don't think many of them or a lot of them that I see have not come up on that side of hard journalism in the first place. And you know, I've often thought that, and I think I might have shared this with you before, I think that lots of times it was a time that you worked your way up to being a commentator. When you were a commentator, you had been a journalist.
Exactly.
Right, you had
now
been in
you
the
have
trenches.
Like Touré, Al Sharpton, et cetera, who, like you said,
yeah.
not knocking
now,
them, but
now, Al Sharpton was at least an activist. And I'm saying that other people, they came up through a different thing. It's almost like Obama. You know, when the people in the civil rights movement were really annoyed that I guess Obama didn't come and ask them permission to run. Well, there's a generation now. But I do think that there's something to be said for being a beat reporter, for doing the stories of the school board and the, you know, the whatever, and really getting that kind of grounding. But now it's almost like we have more commentating than we have reporting. So you don't have people reporting. And it's always been the case that even when you're reporting, it's like, what kind of questions are they asking? And so now we've got this sort of celebrity, it's like celebrity culture. And there are people who I enjoy. Now, I do every other week Saturday morning commentaries on the Saturday Morning Solution Show on WLOU Radio. And one of the things that I observed a few weeks ago was that the blackest people on TV to me is Chris Matthews and Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC, because they seem to have the freedom to be angry and to, you know, and to really express their points in a very expressive way and still maintain employment.
And also certainly maintain a level of credibility. We had Tavis Smiley on Noise and Notes a few weeks ago, and I asked him about the issue of have African Americans been critical of this president, and they say no. Now, obviously, Dr. Cornel West and Tavis have made some comments about this president over the years. Some part of that people are saying is just simple hating. They don't like him personally. They feel personally slighted. Some say, no, there's some legitimate issues from the left that the president hasn't addressed poverty and other issues as he should, and that any other president would be called out on by African-American commentators more so than this president. Are we still in love with the cultural idea of Obama and we're giving him a pass politically? Or do you see what Tavis and Professor West doing as very personal and not political?
Well, I think that, yes, I think we are in love still with the idea of Barack Obama. And the one thing that, you know, I often say is Barack Obama never purported to be Stokely Carmichael. H.Rap Brown would not be elected. I mean, I think we have to deal with, you know, the reality of what is. And the fact of the matter is that in every election you have a choice. So you could choose Obama or you could choose Romney. So, you know, you try to go in politics. It's almost always been the lesser of two evils. The other thing I think that Obama has not been as black as I'd want him to be in terms of addressing himself to black people specifically in certain specifics, the way he has Latinos and gays and other people. So I think certainly there's some critique there. I also think that that there is, you know, this is still the United States. And this first black president, we had to expect that it was going to be difficult for him. We had to expect that it wasn't going to be, you know, a SNCC person, a freedom rider or whatever. Obama is aware of that history, but that's not how he came up. And so I'm not sure he'd have been president. As for Tavis and Cornel West, and I used to go on Tavis's show, you know, and do commentaries and really enjoyed it. But I think that this notion, and I don't know whether it's a, it made it feel personal. And so once it got to be that Tavis and Barack, and I don't even know if it's hating, didn't like Obama, that I think that it took some of the sting out of what they were trying to say, the criticism, because people who support Obama could always put it in those terms.
Because you know, as a journalist, particularly as an African-American journalist, when you go after certain people in the public eye, whether they're ministers, elected officials,
right,
from, you know, your council member up to your president, there is this issue of, well, why are you airing dirty laundry? Why are you working to undermine this African-American who's trying to do right, trying to do something for the entire community? There's almost this litmus test of you as the African-American journalist, you're supposed to understand and not uncover the dirt.
And that's always been the case. I mean, I think that for African-American journalists, you're supposed to understand, you're supposed to tolerate. And the truth is that if we think about it, African-Americans are still very delicate. I mean, in the sense that what we want to talk about, you know, how we look at the news and we see there's another murder and you go, please, God, you know, because what we still understand is that judge one, judge all. And that.
Yeah, I was saying the other day, the Paul Barth situation here with the McMahon Fire Department and the Crusade for Children, I don't think that we will use Mr. Barth's indiscretions. I don't think there's any single white person in the city of Louisville who goes, man, that has a bad reflection on me.
Right.
But and to bring it home, the situation involving Councilman Barbara Shanklin or Councilman Green last year, or any public official who was African-American, when there's an issue with them, now people are saying, I feel that I'm being judged.
Yes, because that has not changed. And so, you know, I grew up where people, I mean, my father was always, Betty, carry yourself in a certain way. Don't embarrass the race.
Chris Rock said that was the whole point of the civil rights movement, right? That we all were, it was the ability to, for me to be a C student, for me to be as mediocre as the white people were. Isn't that part of like equality right there?
Well, it could be, but it was not the goal. I mean, the goal, and I'm a little bit older than Chris Rock, but the goal always was to be excellent. I mean, the idea that, you know, to be smart was to be white and all of that was something that crept in here later on. But I think that those of us, particularly of a certain age, you still have a certain consciousness that you want to be supportive because we're still delicate, because we're still not judged, you know, as individuals. So we carry a lot of historic baggage that I think nobody judges all white folks by some crazy white person on TV. But yet, I listen to black people talk about movies and stuff like, I mean, we invest so much in a movie. Tyler Perry, you know, has got to do this for us, and Spike Lee has got to do this, because we still have.
And that character in that one movie has to be like that.
Right, exactly.
And so. It's bad for me.
Exactly. We still have that sense of defensiveness, and we still invest a lot, because when a lot of screens, a lot of eyes are looking at us, we still get embarrassed. We know that doesn't matter where we live in that city, we know that all of our children could be Trayvon Martin, you know, walking down the street, and your son your middle class son that you did all these things about. All it takes is one person to go, you know, that kid looks dangerous. So it's almost like we're not free yet. You know, the struggle continues. We're not free yet from the negative images that people have of us. And I think that's part of the problem that happened with BET. I think a lot of Black people stopped looking at BET, even for news, because they just said, you know, this is offensive. You know, just this constant stream of half naked and booty call and booty shaking and, you know, and that kind of thing.
It's some old coonery.
Yeah. And I think that that's kind of, you know, something that people still say, I don't know. And so I think so in the political arena and in the media, and, you know, as I did for many years, I took a whole lot of punishment. I mean, for saying the white person could say the same thing I wrote. But when I wrote it, I had to be called the names. I had to be called out. And when the Courier Journal started and all the other papers started this thing of people could comment online, you know, anonymous, and they could just talk about my mama and call me all these different names. And then you couldn't come back and defend yourself, because what are you going to say? I mean, once you write it. But that's what I'm saying. Anybody who goes, who's Black, who's in the media, if you play a certain role, they're not going to like you. If you write a certain thing, and you may have gotten it too, when you try to go in and be critical, if you can't take that heat, you got to stay out of the kitchen. Because, yes, our people do hold us to a double standard. They really do. And the other folks hold us to a higher standard then too. When, you know, when people would say, well, you know, we can't find any qualified Black people. And I look around and see 50 unqualified white people, but that's never like the issue, because you don't ever stop hiring white people because one of them is a damn fool. You know what I'm saying? But for us, you know, the residual thing is that we're always on, you know, until we're in the privacy of our home, we're always on stage. You know, we wear the mask, as the poet said.
Betty Baye, thanks for joining me.
Am I over already? Thank you, Philip.
No problem. The University of Louisville's athletic department is moving to the ACC, and fans and political leaders alike are praising the move. I talked to WFPL's Gabe Bullard and Joseph Lord about whether local reporters are too busy being cheerleaders instead of truth tellers. And we also address the lack of beat reporters who focus on city government and other issues as sports coverage becomes more prominent. Howard Fineman, who was a former Courier reporter,
right,
now the editorial head of the Huffington Post,
right,
was on national TV all the time. He wrote a piece about Louisville going to the ACC, and he made it seem as if, you know, all boats will rise as a result. The community will be improved because Louisville's going to the ACC.
Right.
I think I'm a partisan University of Louisville fan. Go Cards. Absolutely. Everyone who knows me knows that. But there's a separation between the serious political issues we have and the idea that because we are doing better in sports and we have a more prestigious conference, that will somehow trickle down to our political issues?
I don't know if that's exactly what's being portrayed, but I do think you're right as far as there being some sort of cheerleading from the sports press and being happy about the ACC move, in part because it's also going to make their jobs more exciting. It's a more exciting conference. There's going to be some more exciting teams they're playing. It's just the same as, you know, if we're reporting on politics and there's some sort of political scandal, then we get a bit excited about it. There is that bias that you hear, I think Clay Shirky, a few other folks have written about, a bias that reporters have toward what's going to be exciting for them to cover. I don't know what this will actually end up meaning for the community. I mean, I don't know what the sports tourism market is like for college.
Well, certainly this region, and one of the reasons that Louisville was picked for the ACC was that we're one of the biggest, I guess, markets for college
sports. For college
sports.
Basketball.
College
yeah.
basketball.
Yeah. Yes, and I guess if you were going to make the argument that this would be some sort of benefit for the city, you would say, well, the more people who go down to the Yum Center for games, not that U of L really has a hard time selling tickets for its basketball games already, but the more people who go down to for games at the Yum Center, the more people who go to games at Papa John's, the more people who are going to be going to businesses in those areas. So there could be some.
But hasn't the Yum Center struggled?
Yeah, I mean, the revenues from the TIF, the district around it, they haven't performed as much as they wanted to.
So those promises haven't seemed to be fulfilled. The promises that our fanfare and fanaticism with our sports has not translated into
Well, I think there's two things there. Some of it does apply to the economic climate and also the lack of other events happening right. when there aren't athletics. You know, there are big concerts there, Justin Bieber, Bruce Springsteen, all that, but not every week necessarily. So a lot of times that arena is sitting empty. You know, I come from St. Louis, and when I was there, there was all the talk about building the new Busch Stadium for the baseball Cardinals, MLB, and a lot of the talk about how it was going to end up reviving downtown. Well, for years, there was just a big hole in the ground next to the stadium where there's supposed to be some sort of development. This idea of the stadium stimulating economic growth, it can happen to a degree, but it's not necessarily that a stadium's a big driver. I mean, okay, if you get out of your car at Papa John's and start walking around.
I'm not going to get into the pipe dream of the NBA coming here. But and the reason I bring this up, Gabe, you wrote a piece on another departure from the Courier-Journal, Dan Klepall, the Metro government mm-hmm. reporter for the CJ, for the newspaper. And we see, while there was a lot of focus on the ACC, and we saw a number of reporters both here locally and nationally covering it, we're losing reporters who are actually covering the nuts and bolts of our city government that deals with a lot of these questions of the arena, TIFs, bonds, et cetera, that build Papa John's Stadium, Yum Center, et cetera. Why is Dan leaving, and what does this mean for Metro government reporting?
Well, Dan got a job with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's going to be covering, I believe it's the suburban county just north of Atlanta, about 800,000 people. He says they provide city-like services. So just covering one of these big, sprawly-type governments that exists out in the Atlanta near suburbs. So he'll be covering that. He took off. He said it was a hard decision to leave the Courier because he's done some good work here. And he's
been
here
since 2007. And, I mean, I think more than anyone, he's associated with uncovering all these issues with discretionary spending on the Metro Council, with the mayor's office, Cordish Company. Right. Mm-hmm. But more than his departure, because we can get focused on one person, I think your piece pointed out that we have had a number of different reporters who no longer cover Metro government at all compared to maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Right. Well, Dan was, you know, you and I both have covered city government. We were covering it at the same time, even with Dan a few years back. And, you know, there were fixtures at the Metro Council meetings. There
television
were fixtures
reporters.
At these events. Yeah, there were TV reporters. There were radio reporters, print reporters. Everybody was out there. Now that's dwindling. I mean, what TV reporter is steadily covering City Hall? Andy Alcock from WLKY, he left. And I did sort of an exit interview with him once he got a job at the station of Florida. And he was saying that political news is a hard sell on TV in general.
Someone who used to work at the Courier, and you now work here, and someone who talks about media a lot, I mean, what's the... Are you worried and concerned at all about the lack of coverage of local city issues, or is it a matter of different outlets have different mediums and different ways they cover things?
Well, I think everyone should be worried. If the more reporters you have on the ground, the more potential you have for things that are happening in the city that need to be that people need to know about for that information to get out there. And whenever you have fewer reporters on the ground, it's an issue.
Well, Joe, Gabe, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.